can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Aha. Now, Donald, we've done a little sport first, we did.
Can we do a little bit more on sport?
Yes, we're doing a little bit more because I was bringing up this when we truncated the conversation about this book out called Crimo. Now, remember there was some chat about it a couple of months ago on this very forum. Someone had criticised you because they said you didn't you were the casting vote that didn't select Peter Crimmins in a grand final. Do you remember that?
No. Hang on, no.
Well, go on then.
What? Well, I didn't have a casting vote. I wasn't a member of the...
No, but you. It was suggested in this book by the Crimmins people and Peter himself said that you were the casting vote and that's why he didn't get a game. In the Mike Sheehan, who's I think might be coming back on the podcast. I think he's eager to come back on, Don, but he's waiting for that general period. You know, time is a great healer, where the man who published this book, Jeff Slattery, I think is one of the main people who said, Mick, why are you on this show? Mind you. Do you know, we asked Jeff Slattery to come on and be the third person, replace Mike. He could be the voice of reason. And he rejected that, but loves to tell people we asked him. anyhow, and we still ask him again. But he says here, Peter Crimmins, it was said, took exception to you because he didn't like you, and that's fair enough. He said you were insular. And a bit like you were talking about the Brisbane Lions, you didn't smile and you didn't get on with people. And that's fine. But it was generally considered that you were the casting vote as to why he didn't get a game in the grand final. And that actually has been refuted in the book by people like Bob Keddie, who said it wasn't fair. And Ken Herbert, I think, had a casting vote on whether Crimmins got a game in the grand final, and it was generally believed and conceded that John Kennedy Sr., the coach at the time, actually said that he didn't think Peter Crimmins should be playing because of his injury, where he had to have his...
Can I just pull you up? There was no such thing as a casting vote.
Right, that's correct. Okay,
so you've got something wrong there. It didn't come down to a casting vote at all.
Don, I'm your ally here. I'm agreeing with you.
No. Anybody. I'm defending everybody that was at that meeting. It didn't come to a casting vote.
No, it didn't. It was just a majority decision. Well, I'm agreeing with you.
Who said it was casting vote?
Well, he did.
No. I'm just wondering, where did he get that from?
Where did you get that book? It said people forgot, I'm quoting, people forgot Ken Herbert was on the executive of the club for a while for business acumen. And this is what Stuart Trott said. I tend to believe what Scotty says, having a little say in the decision. I feel for Scotty because Scotty got the blame for it, but he deserves better. If anyone made the call, it was Herbert. John, this is John Kennedy, was the one who decided that Crimmins couldn't play. So they are absolving you, Donald, from the criticism you received, probably from the Crimmins camp, that you were a deciding vote which saw him not be selected. This has been refuted by several people, and that's in the book called Crimo, which is written by Dan Eddy and published by Jeff Slattery from Slattery Publications. And Mick gave us this book. It's a very nice book. I'm not sure how sales are going, but the salacious parts of it are that you, because you are the man of the moment, have been blamed for everything that probably you didn't have much control over because you just exercised your democratic right to vote one way or the other. And you were not to know, Donald, that Peter Crimmins was... his illness was going to end up in his being fatal. You didn't know that, and that's not the reason you didn't vote for him. The fact that he had to strap his groin to his scrotum? His testicle to his, because it was swollen. And you thought, probably, generally, people thought that you wouldn't go into a grand final if you had that injury. Is that fair or not?
What I'm more interested in, did I get acknowledgement in that book for proof reading or proof approving all the photographs that were there? Well, every photograph there was run past me as to see as
well. I think they're in the general domain. I think they're in the public domain. There's a picture of Crimmins leading you out. He's the captain. You're the vice captain. You're running out behind him, Donald. They're down the race. That must have. That must have gripped you. That'd be hard to swallow. That you've got to eat humble pie running out behind the man you didn't vote for.
I was vice captain.
That's right, and he
was a captain.
That's
so
right.
So where does a vice captain?
And he said you didn't support him in any way at all. This is in one of the quotes in the book.
Well, I just wanted acknowledgement for proofreading all those
photographs. I cannot support Don Scott because he never gave me any support. So it's a book. You're laced throughout it, Donald, with a view to selling it, I think, marketing it. All the rest is window dressing, but your gruff attitude and the fact you didn't smile and you didn't vote for him has actually pushed this onto the best. I'm not sure how many. Okay, how much is it, incidentally? Let's see. Crimo, mix. Let's see how much could you snap it up for? Where's the price of it? Slattery Publication. The Slattery Media Group. Jeff, there's a lot of photos in here. You, Don, scowling.
I know. I was on the phone for a long time. I put a lot of work into that.
So you helped them stitch you up?
What did I say? Did I say I proofread the photographs?
Did you know that they were going to stitch you up?
Yeah. Well, what do you think?
Yeah. Just it's unusual.
Why?
Well, this is what Bob Keddy says about you. He said... Crimo embraced everybody and everybody loved him, Keddie said. Whereas Don was most reclusive during his playing days, he was very angry with his teammates, and if they didn't do what he expected of them, he was very savage on them. That's fair enough. That's your policy about the Brisbane Lions, that they were serious and didn't smile, whereas Richmond, the coach, was late to the playing of the grand final and the welcome to country, and that they were smiling during the preamble to the game, Don. That's why Richmond failed. You haven't smiled since you stopped playing.
I just smiled today.
I haven't smiled today because I told you I'm very sleepy. I feel like I want to go to bed.
$34.95, that book.
So anyhow, that was...
Little Sir Echo.
$34.95.
At all good bookstores?
And the bad ones too.
So that's... Don, we're getting on to general things, and we're not going to mention the government, the Victorian government, because we have a man coming on we're going to speak to. I can say who we're going to speak to. It's Jeff Kennett, who I think... is just about at boiling point with this government, not because he's of a different political persuasion, but of course he is, but the fact that, and I think everyone that is not absolutely a rabid supporter of Dan Andrews would say he is it's an extraordinary what he's doing. He has no interest, and so we're going to speak to Jeff about that. So we'll leave that till later.
Can we talk about who we got next week?
Thank you.
Because we'll let Don know.
Let me know like 5 minutes beforehand.
We're pretty excited, actually.
Oh, incidentally, Peter Jones, Percy.
Oh, we're not going to talk about it.
That went out over very well, Percy Jones. He was extraordinarily popular. He had about 15,000 downloads of his.
He's got more than that.
More than that.
More.
50,000 downloads. And Simon O'Donnell last week, I got a text from the man who owns the Cathedral Golf Club. David Evans.
Oh, okay.
Who, remember, Sim said that I...
you had a piss.
Urinated on.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, I saw his name on the text, David Evans. I thought, he's going to shout at me. He said that is the funniest thing he's ever... Simon O'Donnell speaking about...
How did you get up talking about that cathedral? How did you two get up there? By helicopter?
On a helicopter, yes.
You went by helicopter?
That's correct, Don.
What value would there be for you and Simon O'Donnell playing around Cathedral? Why would they waste a helicopter flight on you?
They don't waste it. You pay for it.
Oh.
Yeah, what? Really? What do you think? You think David Evans sends a helicopter
There must be a bottomless pit somewhere.
What's that, Don?
A bottomless pit of money?
For the people renting the helicopter?
Yes.
Well, Don, this is how it works, mate. The helicopter, I think, is $700 an hour.
Right.
Maybe. It takes...
An hour?
No, it takes 12 minutes to get there.
Well, from where?
From the outside the casino.
To?
Maybe 20 minutes, right? 20 minutes. And if there's four of you in the helicopter, you divide four into 800, which goes 200, doesn't it? It's $200. David very kindly let us play on there as a sponsorship treat for us. So it cost $200 for the day to fly up on the helicopter, as opposed to spending a couple of hours in the car driving up through the Black Spur, Don. I drove up through the Black Spur. Oh, well, I shouldn't say this. No, I won't say that. I drove up with Shane Warne in his car up through the Black Spur one day. That was an experience. Shane's a very good driver. And likes to drive reasonably quickly, but keeps well within the speed limit. But
out a few of those curves, did he?
Some of those bends are pretty sharp, and while there is a speed limit, to go through those bends at the speed limit is quite hair-raising, and it was quite exciting. Took me about 12 holes to just settle down. When I got to the cathedral, that was his ploy, you see. We bet for a little bit of money, not a lot. And by the time I settled down after the car ride, he had well and truly boxed me into a corner, Donald. Now,
what about a film script? I've just come up with a film script. You ready?
Holy shit. Yep, no, I am.
I think there's one just starting to brew at the moment.
Okay.
George Pell and Giovanni Baccini. They're both cardinals.
Yes.
At the Vatican.
Mm-hmm. You now, play George Pell, will you? Would you play George Pell?
I just think what is going on there with the money situation, like Pell was in charge or trying to straighten out the coffers, and the money that supposedly $1.4 million, I think it was, came to Australia, and the buying of luxury apartments in London and the intrigue that's going on. Why would Pell go back?
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, John.
Now, please, Don, don't say you're a smart ass or anything. Could you tell me what you're talking about? George Pell,
how we has all this know. Well, don't you read the papers
yes,
or follow
George
the
Pell
news?
George Pell was accused of shuffling people like Jeffrey Risden or whatever his name is, Gerard Risden
all
around.
All of that, we all know about George Pell, but over in the Vatican right now, there is Cardinal Giovanni.
Yes. Whatever.
Can't pronounce his surname, B-double-C.
Whatever.
I-U, and he is in charge of finance.
Yes,
now,
and?
Pell was also in that department before he left.
Yes.
He was trying to straighten out the papal finances.
Yes.
And there's a little bit of...
skullduggery?
...going on that the papal money has gone into the buying of luxury units or... property in
so
London.
George is buying.
Also, the $1.4 million has come over here. I don't think there is any love lost between the two, so it could be an interesting scenario to what happens. And why would Pell go back to the Vatican too?
So George Pell, you're saying, has now transferred some money into buying some property.
No. He was overlooking.
I can't understand what you're talking about.
Oh, God.
Go
Everybody
on.
Else can accept you, I realise.
Can you rock it? Can you understand it?
Not sure.
He had no idea. So George Pell, has he misappropriated some money for his own use?
No, he was overlooking the finance, trying to straighten out the papal finances
and this
before he came to Australia.
And Giovanni has been
rorting
the system.
Well, we just leave it open at this stage.
Were we?
It could be a very good film script.
Okay, would you play George Pell if you were asked? If they said, Don, we've got a film script for you, could you read the script? Would you like to play George Pell?
How do you think I'd go? I think I'd do a terrific job. George has got no personality.
No, that's right. You're through to the semis without dropping a
that's
set
right.
there.
You'd need a rug.
A rug.
To look like him.
Yeah. And you'd have to get one of those big
He's a tall man. He's a tall man.
And you have to have one of those big gowns that he wears when he does communion, you know, the ones that
Kaftan.
Yeah, that's right. And this was one of the anomalies of the man who gave evidence, said that when George was accused of having some sexual dalliance with those boys, that he opened the front of his kaftan, and George said, through his solicitor, that he didn't open anything. He said if anyone wanted to have a look at his bits and pieces, they'd have to lift it up. So it was a discrepancy between what they said he could do and what he couldn't do with his kaftan, Donald, and let alone what's under the kaftan. So who would you get to play Giovanni? Me. I could play opposite you. You could be George, and I could be Giovanni. And the rocket here could be George Risden. What's his name? Jared Risden. Risley.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, it's not a Jared comedy. Risden. No, I didn't think of this as a comedy.
Would have to be.
Jared what Risden.
Boys, how what about that? Daylight saving? I know you haven't fixed the clock here now. Can you tell me why it has come in so early this year?
It's and always this week.
Well, you're not happy with it?
I thought it was 4 weeks later.
Well, what does it matter?
Well, even with coronavirus going on at the moment, doesn't that encourage people to go out and enjoy the outdoors? We're in lockdown.
Well, we'll ask Jeff about that.
Well, no, we're not. We haven't got a curfew anymore.
Yeah, we have.
Well, we
curfew.
We cannot travel. Over. We cannot travel.
What?
The curfew's over.
You don't have to be in by 9.
No.
So you can stay out all
night. No.
I didn't know that.
The curfew finished Sunday before last.
I'm so confused with all of this.
I thought it was just eased out an hour.
Out an hour, yes, exactly.
Really? Well, everybody was in the park out front of my place until all hours on Sunday, Saturday.
Don't say where.
Well, I'm happy to say Yarra Park.
Rocket.
Oh, Rocket. Why would you say that? The police will be around there in 5 minutes. Rocket. On a hot day, on the weekend, everyone went to the beach. There's a lot of trouble down there. Now you've put all the residents in of East Melbourne about Yarra Park.
It wasn't the residents, let me
say. Oh, who was it?
Who knows, but it's a bunch of blow-ins we've never seen before.
You know what happened? The police came around and visited him because he opened his mouth. Now you've put all your friends. You haven't got any.
You whack, Rocket, you whack us for you're just speaking crap. There's
a curfew. Over,
well,
isn't
go
it?
On.
No.
I don't think.
Remember they changed it. Hang on. Just to, remember they changed it the Sunday before last Monday when the court hearing was to take place about the legality of it?
Yep.
And then they said they thought that because the curfew had been taken away, that court case wouldn't go ahead, but it still did.
So there's no curfew. Stay up till 3 in the morning if you wish. That's go on, there's check no it, curfew. So
the people in front of why were the beaches
open?
Wrong.
Why were the beaches open? How do you contain people anyway on a fine day like we had on the weekend, 27 degrees?
You're not allowed out for more than 2 hours, are you? Don't tell me that's been taken away as well. I think you can't go out for more than 2 hours and you've got to be in by 9 o'clock.
It ended on the 27th of the 9th.
The curfew?
Yep.
What, the 8 o'clock curfew?
Well, yeah, but hang on, till what hour?
Yeah. There's no curfew anymore.
No, I think...
This
is so confusing.
The 8 p.m. to 5 a.m. curfew is over and so too is the 9 o'clock one. It's over.
Well, I didn't know that. There you are. Well, look, we are ultra-crepidarians.
I must admit I'm losing a bit of interest in the whole thing that's going on.
What about this? The government, here's the government again, through the health minister, said you cannot wear a bandana or a scarf to cover your nose and mouth. Who says you? Why can't you wear a bandana or a scarf to cover your face?
That is an unbelievable. They don't hold credence as far as I'm concerned. I know. We were supposed to wear gloves initially. Do you remember going back into March where it was suggested wear marked gloves? When you go to the supermarket, everyone was cleaning everything.
The idea.
And they said that masks don't do anything. If you go back to March, masks don't stop this virus. Now we've got to wear masks.
If the idea is, Donald, to stop the spread of coronavirus through nasal residence or breath, and you cover your face, what's it matter what you cover your mouth and face and nose with?
No argument.
And here's my other thing. Tell me this. I'm on this about... You are telling me that in this day and age that we live in, that the police will nab you. This is not the police's fault. This is the people who make the laws. That you can't put your arm on the door sill of your car if the window is down, or you'll get fined 3 points or $300.
That's been in for a long time.
Why? If you want to put the arm, if you want to put your elbow on the open door,
no, you're not allowed to, John. That's been in for a long time.
Why aren't you allowed to?
Well, if they consider it dangerous, you might
dangerous
have
dangerous to who?
Yourself, number one. You might have your arm taken off.
So if you ride a motorbike,
that's nothing new.
If you ride a scooter or a motorbike or a push bike, and you've got a helmet on, there is no part of you that is protected on either of those three forms of transport, and yet you can't put your elbow on the door sill of your car when the window's down. It is, why do we put up with nonsense like this? Who says that? Why, if you want to put your arm on the window?
Well, we're being run by bureaucrats. I think this has exposed, coronavirus thing has made us aware of a lot of things. And one is the people that run the state, the bureaucrats, leave a lot to be desired. And now they're under the microscope. And I think a lot of these positions, it's a job for the boys there, and they're on very, very good money. And the other interesting thing is, we're talking about bureaucrats and whatever else, the Sam Burgess thing, which was reported in the Australian over the weekend. They had text and telephone calls and whatever else. How come they can use those text and telephone, well, they've got access to those things, text and telephone calls, yet the state government, those people were texting and telephone calls, yet there's no record. There's 6 minutes of no records.
Because they're liars.
But how come they can get it and publish? I thought it might have been against the law to do what they've done to Sam Burgess.
He's a very nice man, Sam Burgess. I know the Burgess boys. I'm not condoning. I'm not sure what he's done. I'm not condoning.
Well, that's the other thing. What has he done? Has there been any charges laid?
Not sure.
You know, there's accusations of domestic violence, drug taking, and affairs. What are you mouthing, Rod?
Well, affairs aren't illegal, are they?
No, but
was he texting? Was it harassment? Was it by texting?
Well, we don't know, but they were using text messages and telephone calls. Yet, I thought that might have been against the law.
Just as a matter of interest, notice Harvey Weinstein again has been charged with another three rapes. If ever there was a piece of shit on this planet, as opposed to the other people I've called pieces of shit, Harvey Weinstein is one of them, along with the other two people I called pieces of shit. I only got into trouble for calling one other person a piece of shit.
Yeah, well, we won't go there.
Who was the third that we... Not the one you don't... We don't need to revisit. Who was the third?
Jeffrey Epstein. Ghislaine Maxwell.
Yep.
Piece of shit. The four of those people I mentioned.
What about a little bit closer to home? Talking about incompetence and whatever else, and questions should be asked. North Melbourne Football Club.
Oh, yes.
Are they an assisted... Oh, I think they are. I'm asking the question. I probably know. They're an assisted AFL club.
Yep.
Okay.
Most are.
Well, yes. That's a very good point.
Don't drop the voice down. Speak loudly.
Oh, the microphone is inch.
But you dropped your voice down as though you're whispering because you didn't want anyone to hear what you're going to say. Say it. Go on.
You're a control freak.
Say it.
Why haven't they been put under the microscope in regard to terminating all their assistant coaches? There's payouts. Jade Rawlings, an assistant coach, got a 2-year payout in his contract.
Yes.
Did they pay out the other assistants, such as Jared Rivers? And the list goes on. I think Jared Moore's down there. He's Scotland. Jason Lappin, Brendan Whitecross played at Hawthorn.
So what's the question?
Yeah, but hang on. Yet they can go and appoint John Blakey.
Yes.
And they're talking about Paul Roos. Now, Paul Roos doesn't come for 2 and 6. Paul Roos will be asking.
2 and 6.
2 and 6. Remember 2 and 6? 2 shillings. I know.
We remember it.
Yes, righto. Well, the younger generation might.
You used to get a florin.
30 pence.
Or a florin.
Florin was... 50?
No, 50. Florin was 2 bob and two and three.
Two and one, wasn't it?
Florin.
2 and 10.
A florin was more than 2 bob.
What was 5 bob?
What?
What was 5 bob? I thought that was a florin.
5 bob.
5 shillings.
5 shillings. Yeah, 5 shilling. Yeah, you're gone.
10 shillings a pound.
A bob again for us that don't know?
A bob. Bob was 10p.
10 cents.
10 pence.
10 cents, a bob. A shilling.
No, no, it's not called cents. It was 10.
It's penny. Bob was a shilling.
A shilling.
And that's 10 cents.
10 Bob. 10 Bob is 10 shillings.
Yeah.
A guinea was 21.
Yeah, that's right.
£2, 1 pence.
I wonder why they changed it.
Anyhow, Don, go on. You had two Bob.
It was multiples of 12, I think.
And when did it come in? Quid. Decimal what? Currency.
What was a quid?
A quid was one. A quid's a pound.
Or was it a pound? 21 pence.
And also a pouch of tobacco, a quid. Don, when did it come in? When did decimal currency come in?
1967.
Six.
You sure?
No. 66.
I think it was 67.
66. I say.
Yeah, you might be right. You're right. Yes, I was just thinking back because of where I was working at that stage.
So
I received £9 a week back in those
days.
So
what are you worried about them not paying out those people they've let go at North Melbourne?
Well, no, I just think it should be put under scrutiny, North Melbourne. They talk about, you know, they're an AFL-assisted club. They've sacked all the assistants. There's huge payouts and they're backing up Reece Shaw.
Yeah.
And wouldn't you have to question, if they're putting Paul Roos in and John Blakey to help Reece Shaw, shouldn't the people who appointed Reece Shaw in the first place be put under the microscope?
But the main man who's still there,
who
is Scott Clayton? He is the recruiting guru.
Well, we wouldn't know yet how he's going because he's only been there a year, hasn't he?
But he's still there, and rightly so.
Yeah.
Would they have to have paid Brad Scott out too? Did they sack Brad or did he resign? Unless
it was the amount. He had 2 years left, but then they only had to pay him out. The difference between if he got a new job somewhere and what he was on. And then he got a job in the AFL.
Do you think that's where the AFL came to the party?
I don't know.
An assisted club.
Yeah, I would say
and
so.
And Brad is now working at the AFL in some capacity.
Was of use there.
So the AFL have come to their help.
Well, not so. If the AFL are assisting the North Melbourne Football Club or any football club, right, you would say that indirectly they're paying him out anyway, so they may as well put him to use because he's a, you know, clever bloke.
Mm. Now,
he's a good fellow, Brad.
I'm just saying.
I'm just making that point.
Right.
God, did you watch the netball on the weekend?
He says it every week.
No, I don't. I've gone cold on it because you idiots don't watch it.
I missed.
There was a great game, Fever.
I did miss Geelong and Port Adelaide.
Yes.
And I did miss the other thing you asked, the cricket. What did you else ask me to watch?
The cricket on Sunday night.
I did miss the doco on that, and I missed the netball. What happened?
Well, Fever.
Hey?
Fever. This is the Western Australian team.
Fever?
Yes, they're called Western Australian Fever.
Wow.
Beat the New South Wales Swifts.
Fever beat the Swifts.
The Vixens, by the way. The Melbourne Vixens are in the grand final.
Would you be going along?
No, it's in the bubble in Queensland. So I'll watch it on television.
Would you have gone?
I don't know whether I would have gone.
What
but
do you
I,
like
I get,
about
you
it?
You get a better view on the television.
Yeah, I've
two young, two young players. One had a football connection. Alice Teague Neild. Her father, Mark, coached Melbourne.
Yeah, Mark Neild?
Yes, she could be an Australian player. Started off at the Vixens, went to Magpies, and now is a goal attack for Fever. If she was to get her 2 point shots together, they play now, you can get 2 and 1 points.
This is not sport, you know that. This was
what, netball?
We were just talking about generally, we've done the sport.
Well, I didn't.
But go ahead. No, it's good, Don. I'm with you.
Well, anyway, she could be a player of the future, and they unearthed a young goal defender. Now, I know a Christian name is Sunday, but I have
chocolate.
I just have difficulty pronouncing the surname.
Afternoon.
You ready? A-R-Y-A-N-G.
Ariang.
Ariang. Okay, Sunday Yariang. Yeah, 19-year-old. Her intercepts.
Sunday Ariang.
Okay, well, her intercepts in that game were just sensational. Great anticipation. So there's two new players for Fever.
Have you heard of the Chadwick Model Agency?
Yes.
You probably
were. You would have been.
I was going to say, remember Simon O'Donnell said that his cousin or something had a.
John O'Donnell played for St Kilda.
Do you remember he said he had a fashion...
Balance. It was called Balance.
And he said you were in there because you used to do a bit of modelling.
I didn't model ever. Simon just ran away with a little bit.
Anyhow, Chadwick Model Agency have now... They have removed the measurements of their models. Now, you're not allowed to say 36, 24, 36.
How do you book one if you're having a showing?
That's exactly the point, Donald. You can now make a private inquiry as to what the model's measurements are, so it you can see if that suits your purpose for what you want them for, but you're not allowed to display their models because it's sort of what, body
hang
shame.
Hang on the dossier or the, yes. the book that comes yes. out, all the...
On their profiles.
Specifications are usually there.
Because it's a body shaming for those people who mightn't have quite the model body, if you know what I mean. Extraordinary.
They wouldn't be models then, would they?
Well, I know, but, you know, it's like the grid girls at the Grand Prix. Not allowed to have girls holding flags because...
Why?
Well, because they said it's exploiting women. Mind you, those women
but
who
they
have...
they get paid and they...
Exiled. You can, Don, please. You can,
what's your ruling again, though, Sam, on the simple ruling on how people should be shaped?
Yes, no, this is my general profile. If you're...
Because I don't fit it.
If you're a man... If you're a woman, I'll do the woman first. If you're a, this is my general rule of thumb, Donald. If you're a woman thinking should you go out with a man, never go out with a man whose stomach sticks out farther than his chest.
That rules me out.
Yeah, because he what can't see his old fella or what?
No, because he's just fat.
Because he's fat. Yep. And you'll love this next one. I don't know why I'm going to say it, but who cares? Because it's. And if you're a man, never go out with a woman whose ass is wider than her shoulders.
Which is not the fashion now. The fashion now is that. I don't know.
No, that's just a joke.
Can I ask you something else? I came up along Beach Road again, and every time I come up along that, why do people in Melbourne, and especially the joggers and the bike riders, wear dark colours? When are they going to realise that they are a danger to motorists? You cannot see them. They should be wearing high-vis colours. They yes. stand out because black blends in.
Yes, with the bitumen.
Not the bitumen, the shadows of trees, shadows mainly because they're shadows cast from trees, lampposts, houses, cars, whatever else. Shadows
and
dominate.
And yet, Don, you can't put your arm out on your window store of your car.
But it shows a lack of imagination. Melburnians have a lack. Well, even you've got black on today. Why have you got black and grey? Dull colours.
Oh, yeah, because I'm not riding a bike and I'm sitting inside here. We
lack imagination with regard to colour coordination. Oh, how's the time going, by the way?
Pardon?
How's the time going?
We're still an hour behind.
We're an hour behind? Okay, good.
Don.
You can do two things at once. Look at the clock and speak to me.
What do you think of this? Now, don't... quite seriously. The Anti-Defamation Commission has cited the fact that they don't think it's correct that there is a sale of Nazi memorabilia going on at one of the big auction houses. And they say it is absolutely disgraceful that Nazi memorabilia, is being auctioned or sold at a auction house for people who want some memorabilia. Do you think that that is fair? If you wanted to buy some Nazi memorabilia that was had a certificate of authenticity, do you think that you should be allowed to sell that?
Well, again, times have changed. My uncle, who went to the Second World War, was in the army.
Yes.
Bought back a samurai sword.
Yes.
There was a lot of army... Yes. Things available when we were youngsters growing up. Kit bags, helmets, German helmets, the hard hats. Used to turn them over, use them as water troughs for the chooks. the Australian ones were pretty... but things have changed, John. Once upon a time, it was just an accepted thing and nobody worried about it. I remember the samurai sword. We weren't allowed to, children, we used to sneak into the house.
So if you went to, I'm not saying Christie's do this or Lloyd's or whoever is the auction house. If you went along to a auction house and it had Nazi memorabilia for sale or auction, do you think it's all right and not discriminatory or not against any principle that you could bid for a legitimate piece of Nazi memorabilia? Like, if there was a letter signed by Adolf Hitler up in a frame, up on a thing, handwritten letter by Adolf Hitler and the bidding got up to whatever, do you think it's reasonable or okay to bid for it?
It's an issue at the moment, but in a thousand years' time, people won't even... I think they should keep
thousand
it.
Years.
In a thousand I years' see. Time, they look back.
I don't. I think it'd be the other way. I think we've gone the other way. I feel like, and I could be wrong, I'm just having this thought out loud, don't jump on me. I feel like 20 years ago, that would have been understandable. People would buy it because they're war historians, right? People are into war and their history buffs like that.
Yep.
But I feel like now, I mean, could you imagine now somebody trying to buy something to do, like some sort of history to do with slavery? That would, you'd be shot if that was, if someone tried to sell something. But
you'd keep those
you're
things.
You're joking, aren't you? They're pulling down monuments in
That's
America.
What I mean. That's what I'm saying. Well, so it's the same, it's a similar thing, isn't it? I mean, well, no, but it, but because it fits into the into a war history buff type of category, it seems a little bit more acceptable maybe because, I mean, yeah, I don't know. But I feel like, Don, the longer we go on with PC...
With what? Political correctness, yeah.
I don't think it will be... I think it'll get less and, be less and less value. It'd be more and more...
No, I think you should keep it because... I think you'll look back on this here. And really who's tricky. To judge when it comes to war... Who is right and who is wrong?
Oh, well,
I think even Australian, beg your pardon.
I think what happened is pretty
well.
Well,
you can talk about Japanese, you can talk about Australians. I will tell you something now.
Will you?
Okay, now, my father came back from the war.
Did he?
And we, as young children, brother, sister, and I, went down and had a look at his stuff that he brought back from the war. And in that was a photograph of a New Guinea fuzzy wuzzy. Yep. They used to help in New Guinea.
Yes.
In the New Guinea War.
On the Kokoda Trail.
Well, and other places. And he had a photograph of a native who had scalped a Japanese soldier. Yep. And he had him by the hair.
Mm.
Oh.
Now, don't tell me about the Allies and whatever. All's fair. There's an old saying, all's fair in love and war.
Yes.
And so we think that we are righteous or whatever else. We're just as much to blame. All's fair in love and war.
Yes, Donald. Have you ever walked up the Kokoda Trail?
No, I haven't, but I don't think I would. And I take my hat off to the people. I've seen it's all right walking it now, but imagine walking it in wartime when they had suffering from dysentery. Mm. They were carrying people who were injured.
Munitions.
Oh, the whole
guns,
lot.
Guns, cannons.
How far would those guys get in a day? You've walked the track, so you've done a bit of history on it.
Yes.
How far would they walk in a day when they were in the war?
Not long.
Not far, would it?
No, not. And it's one of the most emotional things you'll do. I did it
Why
with Gary.
Why is that?
I'll tell you that. I'll tell you, Don. One of the emotional things I did it with Gary Lyon, and you get to the memorials at various stages. Yeah, memorials, and on Anzac Day, the powers that be are flown in from Australia, and they land in the helicopters and get out. And it is extraordinary to be there and think, as you exactly said, that this is rugged terrain that boys and men, I don't think there were women.
No, there weren't.
Stand corrected.
No, there weren't.
But boys and men were thrust into that war in the most horrendous country, carrying stuff, guns, and it is the most emotional thing you'll ever do. And I did it with Gary Lyon on behalf of the Papua New Guinea Tourist Bureau. And we went up there. I did it about 5 years ago, I think. And it was the most horrendous thing I've ever done. And when you get to one of the memorials, the person leading the... a bloke called Peter from... I should know his name. I should know. It's called...
Anyway, keep going.
No Boundaries. Yeah. I think it's...
keep going.
He's a very Peter Miller. He was our guide. There was just two of us and him. And they give you a letter to read out. And we were being filmed, and Peter Miller said to Gary, he said, read this letter out, please, and it's a moment of sobriety and somberness. He said, stand in front of this memorial and read out this letter. So this was on film, and Gary, it was a letter that this boy had written to his mother, and his mother had received it after he'd been shot and killed. And so Gary started to read it out, and he said, dear Mum, just saying that times are pretty tough here and am missing you. And Gary couldn't... Gary started to fault.
Up.
He couldn't... And I said, Gary, for God's sake, man, give me the letter, I'll do it. So I went up and I never even got more than two words out. I looked at it.
Is that through exhaustion?
Or no, just through emotion. And it is, you wouldn't think that you couldn't read a letter out, but when you're standing there in the middle of this rugged terrain, knowing that the boy had been shot and his mother hadn't read the letter and thinking that he was okay, it is a horrendous experience. And
do you realise boys were forging their age to go to war? They were 16, 17, forging their age to go to war.
The most exhilarating. When
that's the Second
World
War we're talking about.
It is.
The other thing that came out of it for me, my father has now passed away. He's not a religious man, but he was against all religions. The only religion he said that was of any value as far as he was concerned was the Salvation Army. He said they were up on the front line. He said the other religions had pray for you before you went into battle and stand down the back somewhere. Yeah. But the Salvation Army were right up on the front line assisting the soldiers. Interesting statement.
So it is interesting, Donald. Did you know this? I was watching, this was one of the docos. I didn't see it on Langer and that boy Kazaja or whatever you called him. I saw a doco on Victoria. Did you know there's 400 dormant volcanoes in the southeast of Victoria?
Yes,
did
exactly.
You know that? The last one that erupted was 5,000 years ago, which in the evolution of the world is like one microsecond away. And they say at any stage, if there's a earthquake or a tsunami, that any one of those 400 volcanoes could erupt. Did you know that we were in a volcano belt?
Exactly. We've got our fault line at Frankston. Did you realise there's a fault line at Frankston?
No.
Yeah, that's right.
And exactly
what you're saying could happen, and it just stretches down to Gippsland.
Imagine if it'd have a train line.
Imagine if it wiped Frankston off the map.
Well, what is it, San Andreas fault line? San Francisco's on that, isn't it?
A huge tsunami and volcano went through Frankston, and it did $8 billion worth of improvements to it. Now, that's a joke. For the people from Frankston ringing. So, now, Trump.
Talking about Trump, I'm just looking over your right shoulder.
Yep.
What's that cap you've got?
Make America Great Again.
Where did you get that from?
Where'd I get it from?
Yes. from America.
Yeah, from America.
Can I have a look at it?
What?
Pass it over. It's just please.
All right.
Somebody obviously sent it. Can I have a look at it?
Careful, Don. Don't let that rub off on you.
Corey McKernan got it for me.
He's got the American flag.
Corey McKernan got it for me. I asked him to bring it back.
Really?
Now, Trump.
You going to wear it?
No.
So, Trump.
You're not?
I hope not.
Well, you're not him. Are you going to wear it?
I've been wearing it. I wear it down to golf and pisses off all the people I play with. That's how it's my little advantage I have.
Hang
on.
Where are you playing golf?
Well, when I was allowed to.
Do you think you're the reason why people are not playing golf?
That's a very good question. I wouldn't put it past that man to be so spiteful
Well, he sent the police around to you.
Didn't I say this in the last segment?
So spiteful.
I forget. My memory's going. Which segment was that?
In the first segment.
What did we do in the first segment?
Now, we're just finally winding this up. Now, listen, Don. Trump has got coronavirus. And the people who don't like him, you want to see the Twitter barrage of him saying they hope he dies and they hope it can't happen soon enough. And people say, oh, that's a disgraceful thing to say. Who cares if you tweet that you hope someone you don't like dies? What does it matter? You can say whatever you like. They're all saying, oh, people have said, gee, I hope Melania and he die from... What's it matter what they say? They're just words. Who gives us stuff? Why would you worry about that?
I thought Joe Biden was very gracious, hoping that the president and the First Lady recover. I thought he was very, very gracious after the hammering he received.
Well, because it's just a political thing.
Okay.
We haven't talked about the debate, Sam. How do you reckon your guy went?
Oh, that was disgraceful, but enough's been said about that.
I'm going to read
Could
this.
Could I ask you one thing, please?
Comment.
Well, no, how did the debate go?
This is home. This is really close to home here. How did we appear in the paper last week?
For going down, having a legitimate reason to be more than
the fact
five
that the car you were driving draws attention?
Yes, because we were followed by
a disreputable
news organisation who is after us because we're after them.
Yes, but do you think it could be you with the car that you drive? It really does stand out and draws attention.
Well, so what? So I'm happy. I'm quite happy to have been cited for being 5K out of my zone because we had a legitimate reason to be where we were. No one ever. I told the bloke who rang me, the arsehat, the
what's his name? Arsehat.
Arsehat.
What are you, what is he? He's not Caucasian. Arsehat. What, Billy? Fred?
He's not Fred Arsehat. Did you say he's not Caucasian? Because I
called him. Well, I mean, that's not an Anglo-Saxon name. What's his name? Billy Arsehat. Arsehat.
Are you being serious?
What's his name?
What's his Christian? What's his
Charles Arsehat.
Charles Arsehat.
The R is even middle
initial. And so you've played with his word and got Arsehat. You've played with his name.
Cock breath. He put in the fact he rang me up and said, why were you 5K away from your domiciled address?
Cock breath.
Cock breath. And I said, why am I explaining to you why I was 5K away? He said, well, I was just wondering if you why if you'd like to try and explain. I said, why would I be explaining to you, you fucking idiot? I said, go away. And then he put it in the paper and he still said that I was 5K away. I said I was, but I had a legitimate reason. So fucking, Jesus, seriously.
They're good
people.
Names, aren't they? Cock breath.
Cock breath?
Yes.
Arsehat and knob jockey. I called him a knob jockey. Because he is a... it's not his fault. Now, I want to read this out. There's a moral to this, Don. Now, we're finishing on this, all right? My girlfriend... So you can listen to this, Don. And it's pretty in small print, so I'll have to... My girlfriend and I had been dating for over a year, and so we decided to get married. There was only one little thing that was bothering me. It was her beautiful, sexy younger sister, right?
Hang on, start again and be a little more fluent.
I'm trying to read it. So there was only one thing that was bothering me. This bloke was going to marry this girl. There was only one thing bothering me, and that was her beautiful younger sister. One day, her sister asked me to come home. One day, her sister asked me to come home.
You just better have a good punchline.
I'm just trying to read because it's so small. She was alone. This is the sexy young sister. She was alone when I arrived, and she whispered to me that she had feelings for me and desires me in bed, and that she couldn't get over me. She told me that she wanted me just once before I got married to her older sister. Well, I was in total shock and couldn't say a word. She said, I'm going upstairs to my bedroom, and if you want one last fling, just come up and get me. I stood there for a moment, thinking, then turned and walked straight out the front door and headed towards my car. Lord, lo and behold, I saw the entire family with my fiancé standing outside and clapping. My girlfriend, with tears in her eyes, ran to me and hugged me. My father-in-law took my hand and said, I am very happy that you've passed our test. We couldn't ask for a better man for our daughter. Welcome to our family. And the moral of the story is, Donald, always keep your condoms in your car and not in your trousers.
Open around the streets late at night. I'm worried because you ain't treating me right. Come back again. I'm just crazy about you, babe.